Everything from clothing to household items are getting more expensive each day. The world of fast fashion has complicated clothing production by shipping cheap parts around the world to whoever can sew them the cheapest. And now you, the consumer, are paying the price with rising costs. American Giant is about keeping things simple and close to home. They aren't affected by tariffs because their products never leave the U.S. Skip the tariff and snag yourself American-made clothing with American Giant. Get 20% off your first order when you use promo code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off when you use code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. Everything from clothing to household items are getting more expensive each day. The world of fast fashion has complicated clothing production by shipping cheap parts around the world to whoever can sew them the cheapest. And now you, the consumer, are paying the price with rising costs. American Giant is about keeping things simple and close to home. They aren't affected by tariffs because their products never leave the U.S. Skip the tariff and snag yourself American-made clothing with American Giant. Get 20% off your first order when you use promo code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off when you use code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is Hidden Killers Week in Review.
A look back at the most prolific stories of the week.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Things seem to be changing in the dynamics of the Adelsons' enmeshed family. So one of the biggest developments this week wasn't about the hard evidence. It was about the family. Donna Adelson's defense team tried to subpoena her own daughter, Wendy, to testify. But Wendy's lawyers fought back and the judge quashed it. That means Wendy won't be forced to take the stand for her mother, though she could still appear under the prosecution's control. On the surface, it's a legal maneuver, but underneath, it feels like the curtain just got ripped back from the Adelson family dynamic a little bit. Let's dig into that. Siobhan Scott joining us, of course, author of this, The Minds of Mass Killers, and her memoir, which is very good, out right now, Nightbird. Get them wherever books are sold. From a psychological standpoint, what does it tell you when a mother's defense team tries to use her own daughter as a witness, potentially at her daughter's own expense?
Well, it's I'm sure a legal maneuver that probably makes sense in the minds of her attorneys. We at least hope so, that they had a plan for it. But it also speaks again of, as we've talked about, the kind of narcissistic enmeshed family system where it's loyalty to mom at all costs. And it's just expected that the kids meet their parents' needs. And that would fit with what we've seen in the history.
Wendy's lawyers argued that testifying under a defense subpoena could, in fact, incriminate her. Wendy, as we all remember, has never been charged with anything. She is innocent, not even until proven guilty. Again, no charges there. So what does it reveal about how close she still might feel to the danger zone in this case, 11 years later, not wanting to get up there on the stand? I mean, is this just because she doesn't want to give prosecutors a chance to go after her, even though she doesn't know anything? And maybe she doesn't. I don't know. That she could slip up and they're going to find some words to twist versus being there for mom, because it feels like she's really... she's now leaning a lot more into her own territory of what's best for me and my kids, not necessarily what's good for the goose is good for the gander. I never thought I'd use that term in a sentence anymore.
I love it.
Yeah.
My guess is that her desire to not be incarcerated and separated from her children is at this point trumping the loyalty to mom, which is really a pretty healthy thing. You know, we talk about that process of individuation. So she's able at this point to separate herself from what her mother wants. And that's a healthy step in the right direction. And also, yeah, I would guess her counsel is going to do everything to keep her from having to testify for the defense in that way, setting herself up for potential charges.
We're hearing, as of our recording today, that Charlie is likely going to be testifying for his mother's defense. Essentially, it really wouldn't hurt anything for him. He'd just be saying the same things he's already said and the same things that he's bringing up on appeal. And it would be that, look, mom had nothing to do with this. She was completely clueless. Now, that may just be protecting mom. I don't know the answer to that, but we may see Charlie come out. I don't know that he has a whole lot to lose at this point by coming out and making that point. How do you think a jury is going to look at that, though? They're going to know Wendy exists. They're going to know Charlie exists. Obviously, Wendy has to exist. This is about the death of her ex-husband. And the fact that Wendy's not up there defending mom, but Charlie is. And those are the two that seem to be in cohorts about all of this. Is that making it look as if Donna is very guilty, that her daughter won't even come out and try to defend her mom?
Yeah, it's an interesting point. I don't know how a jury would take that. I can see it being something that they would ponder, but does it in their minds carry particular meaning? I guess it just depends on the jury and the people on it.
The fact that she is planning on taking the stand, and there's just been a lot of people saying this is a very, 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 very bad idea. Her legal counsel, they ultimately have to do what Donna wants to do. The fact that Donna is out there already saying, I want to take the stand. The trial hasn't even officially started as of our recording. By the time you're seeing this, we might actually be past opening statements. Right now, it's just getting the jury together. But the fact that she's really ready and waiting to raise her hand and get on that stand, what does that say about the psyche of Donna Adelson right now behind bars?
She really thinks that she has the power to influence the jury. And again, that goes with somebody who's a bit overconfident and is probably not in the right mind to, you know, make these decisions. As I've speculated with you privately, we may be looking at a little bit of age-related cognitive impairment. Mm-hmm. Her judgment may not be the best at this point. But somebody who's, let's say, overconfident about their ability to tell a story and convince people, which is unlikely to do her any good.
Which is what it feels like. And let me ask you about that, because I don't know if Donna is starting to suffer from any of that. That would just be pure speculation. She's getting up there in age. It certainly wouldn't be a shocking thing to find that out. It wouldn't be a bad defense, Donna, if you'd like to attempt it. But we've talked about the immediate impact of all of that. And the fact that this family is the way it is, as someone does get older, as someone does enter into some cognitive decline, does boldness come out more in a personality like Donna? Donna seems to be one, if I were to guess, you know, pretty much was the one who always had the answers, and it was Donna's way or no way. That's my conjecture on it, from very likely a extremely narcissistic mother. That's how I view her. And I think a lot of others might as well. As they get older, does it get better or worse? Is this someone who would be more ingrained now today to say, I want to go testify, if in fact her faculties are starting to get a little rough, versus maybe Donna 15 years ago?
Yeah. When we see people age, if they go into cognitive decline or Alzheimer's or you know, any of that, the older people, they get whatever their personalities were like, it tends to intensify because they gain or they lose inhibition. Mm-hmm. And so if you have somebody who's always been somewhat narcissistic, dominating, outspoken, they can intensify with that. If you have someone who's always been benevolent and kind and giving, you see more of that happening because they just, you know, whatever's been in there, it manifests in a more intense way, which means you can find lovely, sweet older people, or you can find really angry, hostile, venomous older people. And maybe when they were younger, they could curtail that.
It feels like it's that or the other quite often.
It does, doesn't it?
It really does. It's like reducing down a sauce for the cooking folks out there.
Good analogy.
You reduce it down, the flavors get intense. You eventually get to a demi-glace where it's just that super thick and it's intense, but it's nothing like it was when it was a big boiling pot a couple hours earlier. That's what you're left with, and you're getting the true flavor of what that person is, and I guess that may be what we're seeing here with Donna Adelson. The family was once a fortress, money, privilege, tight bonds, and now piece by piece, that fortress crumbling. Charlie's in prison for life. Donna's on trial. Wendy trying to distance herself, and the grandchildren are caught in the middle. Feels like the entire family has shifted into survival mode. And let's explore that for a little bit. When you have this family, this image-driven family, like the Adelsons, and they usually cope in the public spotlight with their fractures and by coming together. We saw it after Charlie's conviction. They and then on record recordings talking about their us problem. What do you think is going on here psychologically behind the scenes with Wendy and her kids, with Charlie, with Harvey, who was also on that one-way ticket on that westbound flight that was never going to be coming back? How do you think things are going behind the scenes for the Adelsons now that things are starting to crumble? How do you think they're coping?
It's got to be tremendously confusing to live in this world where you've had this cohesive family, this enmeshed family with mom in control, and to just have it start to fracture like this. So my guess is each one of them is coping in their own way. Who knows what kind of therapy they're all getting, if any, but it would not surprise me that there's a tremendous amount of anxiety and depression and, you know, other kinds of problems. Nobody's probably sleeping very well.
When we look at Donna, when she's been on the stand, because she already has been in some of those early hearings complaining about thin mattresses in jail and, you know, her earwax, you get a sense that Donna very much believes everything she's talking about. I don't take Donna as like I'm trying to slip one past you. With that being said, what sort of role does denial and rationalization play in her mind as all of this is going down? Do you think Donna feels, even though she's denying that she had anything to do with this murder, is there a rationalization going on in the back of her mind that everything she did was for the right reasons? And she is just extremely misunderstood.
Yes. Yes. I completely believe that. It's for a person with this kind of personality. They see the world through a very different lens in a sort of a distorted way. And they can always rationalize and justify their choices, no matter what those criminal behaviors may be. There was a good reason for it. Mm-hmm. And when you do interviews with most people in prison, it doesn't matter what they did, they can always justify and come up with why they had to do it and how it really wasn't their fault and who else was responsible. But I think they believe their own story, and that's a defense mechanism that gets them through the day.
Let me ask you this, from a psychotherapist standpoint, if you were to be sitting down with Wendy today, and let's just say, for the sake of argument, that Wendy didn't have anything to do with this. She knew her family was capable of doing this, but she didn't sign on any dotted line. She didn't give any, yes, go do this. It was just like, oh, they talk about this stuff, but I don't think they're ever going to do it, that it actually happens. And her, for the sake of being a mother to her children, who now obviously don't have a father, grandma's in jail, the brother uncle's in jail. What would you be advising her on how to continue on with life in any sort of healthy way?
There's a lot to unpack about the family and how it impacted her development. And I would just be working with her on looking at things realistically, at getting out of the family story and individuating to be able to separate herself from this family identity, which is, as I've said, very much like the mafia, the Miami mafia or whatever. And I would have hope for her at this point. I think the fact that she's prioritizing her role as a mom and to be present for her kids, rather than stepping in to automatically testify in Donna's defense, that's a good sign. And she's probably getting some help and support at this point. I hope so. Her prognosis is pretty good.
She seems to be carrying herself pretty well.
Yes.
I will definitely give her that. She doesn't come out like, oh my gosh, I'm destroyed. Obviously, I don't know what's going on the inside. This has got to be hell, especially if she didn't know anything. And we don't know that she did know anything. But also, more importantly, are there's two kids. These are not little kids anymore. Now they're in their mid-teens, 14, 15, 16-ish in that area. And they're trying to understand all of this. This happened 11 years ago. This has been an ongoing saga most of their life, that all this has been happening. And, you know, their kids are trying to put life together, try to figure out who they are. They're probably on the internet. They're probably looking up the case. They're probably trying to understand what does the world know about mom, about grandma, about Uncle Charlie. If they're here watching right now, and you're there and you're able to give them some advice, if you can speak to them about trying to get forward in life without letting this become a major factor that defines them, what would you say?
First of all, that none of this has anything to do with who they are becoming as individuals, and to just encourage them to see that grandma and Uncle Charlie had problems and they had a very different way of moving through the world, but that does not have to, going forward, impact their identity and their choices and the lives that they build. And to just keep reinforcing that and letting them talk through the massive confusion that it would be very normal to have. And I would certainly want to normalize the confusion that they must have experienced growing up as little kids with all this legal stuff going on, with grandma being in the center of it, and the losses that they've had. I mean, they've got to have a lot of anxiety, and I would just encourage them to keep talking these things through, to not hold it in, to not feel like they don't have a safe place. And the sad thing is that socially, they may feel a lot of stigma. And so I think that would be something to work on too. And, you know, it would be very normal at this point to be conflicted about how much do I want to distance as far as the family name here. And often I see people when they're trying to individuate from a dysfunctional family, they change their names. And I don't tell people that they should do that, but that's a very normal feeling, is I don't want to be labeled as part of this system for the rest of my life.
Quite often, as we see in these families, the enmeshed families, it goes back to protecting the matriarch or the leader or whatever it would be. And that seems to be in Donna in a lot of these ways, until people walk away. One of the uncles of the children already walked away. One of Donna's kids already living a different life somewhere else. Nothing to do with the rest of them. And it just seems when you have these monster narcissists, they just pull everybody in and suck the life out of them until, you know, the source is gone. And then they move on to the next. Donna, you know, it kind of appears that that's what she's done with Charlie. That seems to be what she's tried to do with others as well. There's nothing wrong at some point of saying, yeah, you know what? You're my blood. Maybe we had some good times together. Maybe I have fond memories of you as a little kid. Because grandma, clearly, she doubted on these kids. She wanted them near her, but it wasn't for the kids' sake. It was for her sake. And that's a hard thing, I think, to understand, especially if you're a teenager, to go, well, this, you think this person has your best interest at heart. And on the surface, maybe they do. Mm-hmm. But deep down, it's not for the right reasons. And walking away and saying, I want nothing to do with grandma. I don't want to speak to grandma. I don't want to have anything in my life of grandma. That might not be the most unhealthy thing. I would say that's probably the healthiest thing in the world to do right now. But that's my perspective. I've walked away from monsters like this before and didn't look back. I know many people who have and didn't look back. You yourself, you walk away from those sort of things. Is that what you would advise to these kids at some point, or just let them know that it's safe, it's okay, even though you may have guilt in your family, you may have guilt yourself of, how could you do that to grandma? She loved you. Mm-hmm. What would you say to that sort of comeback that these kids are going to get if they decide to try and go down that road?
Yeah, I fully support when people come to their own conclusion. I don't ever say I think you should walk away, sure. but certainly if it looks like that's what they're feeling, I fully support people doing that, because it's just, again, it's the individuation process. It's seeing that you do not follow in the family footprint here. You can make your own life, build your own identity. And we do see more and more people giving themselves permission to just disengage and distance. And as I say, sometimes they'll change their name and go on and have a very different future. And it's a choice. Sometimes people can compartmentalize and still maintain, well, there was the good grandma and then there was this other side and we didn't see the other side. So they want to hang on to the, you know, the sense that there was this loving part of grandma. But I would guess in this case, it's going to be hard to do if she's convicted. So
is there anything healthy about trying to maintain some sort of relationship with grandma? Let's assume she gets locked up for the rest of her life. You know, you can go visit her and all that. Is there anything healthy about compartmentalization and compartmentalizing your relationship with grandma, where there's this one over here and that one over there? Or is ultimately the healthiest thing just, bye-bye, grandma, you've made your choices and they're no longer part of my life?
It's a hard call, because I can see people going both ways with it. And so as long as it's not doing harm to them, if they're able to compartmentalize that well, if it's not causing harm, I support their choice. Mm-hmm. But I certainly think if it were me, I would disengage and walk away, and that would just feel better. So it really gets down to people's personalities and what's going to work for them, without feeling like they have to carry this burden forever.
And that's what I wonder about. I mean, there's the feel good. The easy one would be, well, I'll keep her at arm's length and I'll compartmentalize this or that, which is probably not healthy to begin with. Is there any good there? Or is it more like, well, you're feeding the need, you're feeding the urge, you're feeding that little snack. Just wait till dinner. Like, dinner's going to be great. It's over there. Don't have the snack right now. Is it that's being fed and looking towards that immediate, I don't want to say gratification, but that immediate need for, okay, we're normal, we can talk to grandma? Because it would be a lot harder to say, I'm out, I'm done, mm-hmm. I'm cutting these ties. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, that would probably be, if you're playing the long game, the healthiest choice for those people to make. I know it's a personal decision, but is it that sort of a thing where, you know, there's these things like, yeah, you can manage it, but ultimately, at the end of the day, the long-term prognosis is probably not to be there?
Mm-hmm. It's a hard one. Yeah. It's a hard one. I don't know ideally what would be the healthiest.
Yeah.
I could support either direction as long as it's not causing damage to them psychologically. Yeah. I tend to always vote in favor of reality, mm-hmm. and too much compartmentalizing can get people in trouble because it may feed the denial. But I think in this case, it would be hard for, you know, the grandkids to stay in denial if grandma is convicted and incarcerated. As you say, if they want to visit her, they're going to have to visit her in prison. So it's
denial's a very amazing, strong thing.
Yeah.
They got the genes to do it.
Yeah.
That's the scary part. Siobhan Scott, psychotherapist and author, Nightbird. This is her memoir. Go check it out right now in The Minds of Mass Killers, available wherever books are sold. As always, thank you for coming on and giving us your insight.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who pieced together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Target, Nike, and Instacart. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. It's easy to use, and you can get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's Rakuten, Rakuten.com.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who pieced together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts. Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who pieced together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts. Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who pieced together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts. Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who pieced together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts. Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who pieced together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
Are you someone who watches every true crime documentary the day that it releases and then find yourself always wanting to know more, Googling the timelines, red flags, and then falling into the social media rabbit hole? Well, I'm here to do all of that for you, bringing the facts, theories, and details that no one else is covering on my hit true crime podcast, Serialistly with Annie Elise. Whether it's everything with the Idaho 4 case now that the documents are unsealed, or shocking cases you've never heard of, packed with love triangles, cults, and twists you won't see coming. With over 1 million downloads a week, I bring break it down for you just like your best friend would. Serialistly with Annie Elise. New episodes drop every Monday and Thursday wherever you get your podcasts.